Won the chamber last Sunday before I got high. On my way to WrestleMania before I got high. Cops pulled me over last night and I know why.
Why, man?
Because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. Lost my big fat push because I got high. My old friend Zeb got screwed because I got high. But now my phone is ringing and I know why. It's Dixie and Hulk. It's Dixie and Hulk. It's Dixie and Hulk. Alright, alright. It sure doesn't seem like Swagger is going anywhere after all, but I just could not resist opening the show with that little ditty right there. This is episode 262 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com. Sunday, February 24th, 2013. I am the Solid Monster. We're going to get to that interesting story in just a second. My head is spinning, actually. There's been so much news over the last couple of days. It's a good thing I did that bonus show early in the week. For those of you who may have missed it, there was a extra special edition of the Sound Off that went up on Monday, episode 261, that had my full Elimination Chamber thoughts, a full review of the pay-per-view last Sunday, and thoughts from the WrestleMania 30 press conference in New Orleans that took place earlier in the day. I'm not going to recap any of that stuff, so if you want to hear my thoughts on the Chamber, including the Shield match, which I felt very strongly about, you can go back and listen to episode 261. Of course, if you are a subscriber in iTunes, you would have already gotten the episode. You didn't miss a thing, so you might want to subscribe there. But go back and listen to that show if you missed it. It was a good one. Also, my latest Layfield Report column is up. It went up early yesterday morning. I tackled the whole Glenn Beck WWE fiasco. Tom Clark on the Layfield Report already did a pretty good job of summing up his thoughts on why Glenn Beck is an idiot. So it's a short but sweet column. Go back, check it out if you missed it. And also, I'll have the latest Walking Dead recap for tonight's episode later tonight after it airs. So those Walking Dead fans out there can look forward to that. Before we get to the Jack Swagger situation, a funny thing happened last night. The Undertaker returned, and he wrestled at a house show. No, I'm not kidding. At a live event in Waco, Texas last night, The Undertaker made a surprise return to the ring. He teamed up with Sheamus to defeat the team of Damian Sandow and Wade Barrett. Undertaker gave Sandow the tombstone for the victory. There's photos online. He did his signature old-school walk on the top rope. So he was, you know, moving around in there. I mean, it was a tag match, but it wasn't like he was just standing in the corner the whole time. He did his signature moves. He got the win. He did the tombstone, fell right down on his knees, and didn't collapse into a pile of dust. So that's a good sign. I saw one of the photos of him making his entrance, walking up the steps to go into the ring. Looks like he's got a bit of a gut, but, you know, he hasn't wrestled in a year almost, and he's been hurting real bad. You got to cut the guy some slack. I mean, he's been in real rough shape for a while now. If he is going to wrestle at WrestleMania, which I assume he is, I've always assumed he is. If you listen to the show, I never really thought he wasn't going to wrestle. He's got 6 weeks to get himself into better shape cosmetically, so we'll see if that happens. You know, one of our listeners actually wrote into me the other day, and he didn't include his name, so I can't give him credit. Include your name when you write into the show, people. I always say that. But he wrote in with an interesting idea for The Undertaker at WrestleMania if he can't do a singles match, which is possible. I mean, again, he wrestled a tag team match on the show last night. I still think he does a singles match with CM Punk, but if he can't, this person suggested continuing the Shield feud with Sheamus and Ryback and make a six-man tag match at WrestleMania with the Shield up against Sheamus, Ryback, and The Undertaker. And I'll tell you what, I don't think the streak should end, personally, okay? But having said that, boy, the way they've booked the Shield so far, just booked them to perfection. You know, they had big wins over top guys at TLC, big wins over top guys at Elimination Chamber, including John Cena, who's going to the main event of WrestleMania. They could solidify those three guys as the future of this company by having them beat Sheamus, Ryback, and Undertaker at WrestleMania. And not just beat them, but beat them by pinning the Undertaker. And believe me, they see that sort of potential in Rollins and Reigns and in Ambrose especially, or they wouldn't be pushing these guys so hard. You know, the only problem, I guess, with this equation here is I just can't see Sheamus and Ryback losing again consecutive months to the Shield, or I can't see WWE ending the streak. So this scenario, highly unlikely. But it's an interesting one. You know, honestly, it's the first idea that's been pitched, or it's the first idea that I've heard regarding The Undertaker potentially losing at WrestleMania and breaking the streak that really gave me pause and made me think it's not a terrible idea. It really isn't. I mean, again, can you think of three new guys that WWE, either collectively as a unit like Nexus, let's say, or even individually, three new guys that came into the company at once that WWE has pushed as hard and as fast and as well as these three guys? Obviously, they've got big plans for them. Obviously, they see them as potential main eventers down the road. They're great in their role. And I'm just putting the idea out there. This person wrote in. I thought it was actually a very, very interesting idea if they wanted to go in that direction. I hear people always say, well, you know, Undertaker should lose at WrestleMania. He should put over a younger talent. And I always scoff at that because, in theory, it's a good idea. I don't think the streak should end. And quite frankly, if you put The Undertaker in the ring against Damian Sandow or Wade Barrett, you know, first of all, that match doesn't do anything for me. But what does it really accomplish? So if Wade Barrett beats The Undertaker at WrestleMania, and WWE continues to book Wade Barrett the way that they've booked Wade Barrett for months now. I know he's the Intercontinental Champion, but, you know, sometimes he'll get, even the champions will go on losing streaks. The U.S. Champion will lose. The Intercontinental Champion will lose. Wade Barrett's locked in a feud now with Bo Dallas. I mean, would it really make sense? Would it really change his career? Would it really make Wade Barrett, just if he beats The Undertaker at WrestleMania? The only thing it does, it pisses people off, and it breaks something that's really cool that I don't think should be broken. But in this case, this might be the only scenario involving new guys potentially beating Undertaker at WrestleMania where it actually could make a difference, and it could solidify those three. So I just wanted to put that out there. I thought that was very interesting. I assume the Undertaker match last night was just a dry run, just a physical test. I know he lives in Texas. I don't know how far away from Waco he lives, so it was probably an easy ride for him. And, you know, I mean, who knows? It could have just been Undertaker saying, listen, you know, I want to wrestle. And what are they going to say? No. So they had him wrestle at a house show. It was a nice surprise for the fans in the building, I'm sure. Rick the Sign Guy was there. He was the one who took pictures of the Undertaker and put them up on his Twitter page. And I'm sure for the people that were in the building that night, last night, very cool moment. So I think that pretty much confirms we'll see him at WrestleMania. I also saw the Ronda Rousey fight at UFC 157 last night. Another first-round armbar submission win, her seventh in a row for Rousey. She beat Liz Carmouche. It was the first-ever women's fight in UFC history. And I did not see all of the fights on the card last night. I saw the Henderson fight. I didn't see all of them. But this fight kicked ass. Even if you're not an MMA fan, I think if you watch this fight, it's hard. I mean, I can't imagine somebody watching this fight not getting excited, especially in the closing moments. You know, you got 5-minute championship rounds, and Rousey usually finishes off her opponents in short order with that armbar. She's never, ever gotten out of the first round. She always wins her fights in the first round, and this was the closest she came, I think. It absolutely was the closest she's ever come to going into the second round. I think she had about 15 seconds left to spare in the round when she got the armbar. Just really exciting stuff, and very cool to see women's fighting now there's been women's fighting in MMA for a while now, but this was the first in UFC, and it was the main event on pay-per-view, no less. A big spot for them to be in, and very cool moment. I thought they delivered. I hope the show does well, and I don't see anybody on the horizon who could beat Rousey unless they get Cyborg to come in, which I don't think is going to happen, and quite frankly, you know, if Cyborg is allowed to fight with her testosterone levels being what they are, it's almost the equivalent of a guy beating a woman. This chick is so roided up and so drugged up, it's not even funny. For that reason alone, I'd rather not see that fight. You know, let her come down to everybody else's level. Let's level the playing field a little bit, and then I guess that might be a cool fight to see. But otherwise, I don't see anybody who can beat this woman anytime soon, so Just wanted to make mention of that. Now, let's move on to the Jack Swagger stuff. This is the big story of the week. Jack Swagger was arrested on Tuesday night, as you're all well aware by now. He was leaving the SmackDown tapings in Biloxi, Mississippi. He was caught speeding, going 55 in a 45. That was one of the details that we didn't have earlier in the week. We know he got busted for speeding, among other things. He got busted for speeding, possession of marijuana, and driving under the influence. And when I heard speeding, I couldn't imagine how fast he must have been going. You know, was he going 70 in a 50, for example? But no, he was going, I think, it was about 10 miles over the speed limit, which, to be fair, I think all of us have gone at least 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. So I can't fault him for that. I mean, you know, he still broke the law. That's why he got pulled over. As I said on Twitter, for me, the biggest thing was the DUI, the driving under the influence. Now, what state was Jack Swagger in? I don't know. The police officer on the scene would know. You know, was Swagger clearly in a drugged out state, or did they just catch him speeding? He was fine, and there just happened to be marijuana in the car. We don't know all of the details yet. But I said on Twitter that if all of these charges are true, and he was driving under the influence, and the arresting officer felt that, you know, it was necessary to arrest him and get him off the road, and this pans out, and there are truth to these charges, I say Jack Swagger should be fired. Some people might say that's a little harsh. I don't think it's harsh at all. You get busted for DUI. I mean, I've ranted about this so many times before, especially if you go back to Matt Hardy rants. Matt Hardy was getting arrested every other day for DUI, among other things, or DWI, or whatever the hell it is. And it just got to the point where, in Hardy's case, at least on one occasion, he was a menace to other people on the road. That's what really gets me. It's not so much that you're putting yourself in danger. You're putting other people at risk on the road, innocent people, you know, kids. Potentially, because you're driving erratically because you're under the influence of either alcohol or drugs or whatever it may be. And to me, I have no sympathy for people like that. You get busted for DUI, you throw the book at those people. And WWE, I mean, they really haven't done that. There's the precedent with Rob Van Dam back in 2006 when he was WWE champion and ECW champion at the same time, and he was in a car with Sabu. They got pulled over, I think, for speeding. And they found RVD with pot, I believe, on him in the car. And what WWE did was they immediately took both belts off him. You know, Big Show won the ECW title, and Edge won the WWE championship. If I remember, I think it was a three-way match with RVD and Cena on Raw. And so they got those belts off RVD immediately, and then they suspended him for 30 days. The WWE wellness policy grants WWE the right to terminate Swagger's contract on the marijuana possession charge alone. Somebody online looked up Section 14 of the policy, which states that any WWE talent who is arrested, convicted, or who admits to a violation of law relating to use, possession, purchase, sale, or distribution of drugs will be in material breach of his or her contract and subject to immediate dismissal. Now, I can't think of too many people who have been fired for this, but I think you got to start somewhere. You know, the DUI thing is what I find most egregious. I mean, you hear DUI stories of people on the news all the time. You don't have to be a celebrity, and it pisses me off. These people are idiots. And at some point, you got to make an example out of somebody, and I can't think of a better person to make an example out of than this guy who just got, you know, he's in the midst of the biggest push of his career. He's going to WrestleMania, fighting for the world championship. If WWE wanted to really make a stand and show how serious they are about stuff like this, they would fire the guy. Suspend him, at least. But fire him. I don't want Jack Swagger to be fired. I mean, I like what they're doing with him. I like his new theme music. I kind of like the new gimmick, the package of him and Zeb. Swagger was just going nowhere last year. They took him off television. It was the best thing for him. Just get him off TV for 4, 5, 6 months so people forget about that awful year that he had. Bring him back and do something with the guy. And that's what they were doing. That's what they are doing. So I don't want to see him fired, but you got to do something. You got to put your foot down and make an example out of somebody. And again, I think this would be an appropriate thing to do. But apparently they're not going to do that. I don't even know that they're going to suspend him. And that's largely because of the publicity they've been getting for this whole angle with him and Zeb. They love publicity. WWE loves... I mean, that, believe me, that's one of the reasons I'm sure they're doing this angle in the first place. And they got a lot of publicity this week. A lot of conservatives, Tea Party people, very upset. They feel that WWE is demonizing them and mocking them by taking Jack Swagger and making him this, like, Tea Party villain character on television or something. Apparently unable to distinguish between fantasy and reality, because WWE, anybody that's followed wrestling or WWE for any length of time knows that they've made fun of pretty much anybody and everybody, of every sort of race or ethnicity or wacky background or what have you. You know, they've had people for years, just ethnically speaking, they go out there, you know, there was a time when all black people stole and or were servants like Virgil was, and you know, everybody who wears a turban is a terrorist. And I mean, God, I mean, how many years have we seen this in wrestling? It's just something that you accept, and it's a form of entertainment. It's not always entertaining, but it's a form of entertainment. And apparently these people cannot distinguish between fantasy and reality. And one of those people is Glenn Beck. Now, I happen to think that Glenn Beck is an idiot. I think Glenn Beck is a phony. I think he's a fraud. I think he just says shit to get people riled up. I don't think he buys into most of the bullshit he peddles. And the stuff that he does buy into, if he does really believe some of the shit that he says, boy, that doesn't speak very well to Glenn Beck. And there may be people who listen to his radio show and like him, or think he has some sensible views. I don't listen to his radio show. I would watch his television show on Fox every now and then when he would be on there just to see the new level of crazy he would reach every week. And then, of course, he lost his show on Fox. I'm shocked by that. So he went and he made a comment this week. He had to do a segment on this whole controversy. And Beck said that the one thing he can't stand and the one thing he can't tolerate are those stupid wrestling people. And then he went into this whole thing, and you know, to be fair, I listened to the whole 17-minute segment that he did on it, and he made some sensible points. It wasn't a complete 17-minute-long crazy rant. But he went and he used the typical buzzwords and played off the typical stereotypes of wrestling and wrestling fans and all that sort of stuff. And so WWE took it upon themselves to invite him. They invited Glenn Beck to be at Raw in Dallas, which I believe is where he lives or where he does his show, this Monday. They had Jack Swagger and Zeb Coulter break kayfabe in a bizarre YouTube video. They did this YouTube video, basically, where it started out the first minute and a half or so, 2 minutes, as a typical Jack Swagger, Zeb Coulter promo, where Swagger stands in the background and just says, "We the people," and Coulter does 98% of the talking in the video because that's what he's good at. That's why he's there. He's there to be the mouthpiece for Jack Swagger. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the video, they just stop. And the background turns to a green screen, which, you know, reveals they're not really in front of whatever backdrop they're in front of. They're just in a studio somewhere. And they get out of character. And Coulter is now, he's Wayne Cowan. And I'm here with not Jack Swagger, but Jake Hager. And you see, we play characters on television. What we do is not real. We're in the entertainment business. We're not in the immigration business. We're not in the political arena. We're entertainers. And Coulter goes ahead. It almost looked like Vince McMahon had a gun pointed at him off camera, which wouldn't shock me. And he's rattling off all these statistics. 20% of our audience comes from here. 25% of our audience fits in this demographic. And it's like one gigantic did you know fact that Coulter is going on and on about. And I see a lot of people love the video. They think it's, oh, this is great. WWE is standing up for itself. Some people love the video. I just thought it was surreal. And I mean, I'm not a fan of when they pull back the curtain like that. I mean, we all know what wrestling is, obviously. I mean, it really doesn't matter. In 2013, I will admit, it doesn't matter. If something like this happened 20 years ago, that would have been a much bigger deal. But I just don't like that. I mean, was it really necessary to do that? I mean, even CM Punk went on Twitter, and I don't know if this is what he was referring to, but it was shortly after that video got posted. It was this weekend, actually. And he posted a cryptic tweet that said, "Thankfully, that magician just showed the audience how he sawed his assistant in half, so I don't ever have to pay to see it again." and he made no reference of what he was talking about, I have to assume he was referring to this video. So, I kind of feel the same way. I don't need to be beaten over the head with this crap. For them to just go ahead and do a video, like they just blatantly come out and they say, what you just heard is a promo. It's not real. I'm Wayne Cowan, and this is Jake Hager. And you see, we're in a storyline where Jake is going up against the babyface Mexican world heavyweight champion, Alberto Del Rio, played by my good friend, Jose Rodriguez. So it's good to know that, Zeb Coulter and Alberto Del Rio are good buddies. I just didn't like this video at all. And personally, it just seems like they're pandering to me. It's like one person, one dumbass moron with an audience says something bad, and they potentially jeopardize this whole storyline, which shouldn't be happening anyway, because like I said, Swagger should be fired. Apparently he won't be. I don't even know that he'll be suspended. He's back on the road already. He was at that Waco house show where The Undertaker was last night. He had a match with Sin Cara and won. So I don't know that he'll be punished at all. For all I know, you make the argument that Glenn Beck saved Jack Swagger's push. Who knows what WWE would have done had they not have gotten this publicity out of it. So Swagger will be on Raw Monday, which I figured he would be anyway. It looks like he'll still be in the world title picture heading into WrestleMania, and that's good for Zeb Coulter, because he was one of those people who I kind of felt really bad for in this whole situation. He didn't do anything wrong, and potentially he could have been out of luck if Swagger got fired or suspended. I mean, you could pair him off with somebody else, but really, who do you pair him off with? It just would feel kind of forced if all of a sudden Zeb Coulter was managing, you know, Mark Henry, or you bring up some guy from developmental like a Bray Wyatt or somebody like that, whose character doesn't necessarily fit in with what Coulter talks about. So it looks like his job will be safe for now. But, you know, that's the other thing about this whole DUI thing. You know, Zeb Coulter, Dutch Mantel, his granddaughter, Amelia, was killed. I mentioned this on the Sound Off after it happened. This was months ago. His granddaughter got killed by somebody who was speeding while driving under the influence last year. I mean, what must he be thinking about this whole thing? I mean, even if Swagger was going 55 and a 45 or whatever it was, I mean, still, DUI? I mean, how stupid can you be? You're in the middle of the biggest push of your career. You're going to WrestleMania in the world title match, even if you do open the show. You're still in the world title match at WrestleMania. And you can't help yourself. You just can't help yourself. You have to drive around with pot in your car. Apparently, Swagger, this has been a problem for him for quite some time. It goes back even to his college days. I guess he's been a pothead for a long time. And you know, again, whatever he does, I guess, in the privacy of his own home or with friends is his business. But to put yourself in a position to get caught like that, you're an idiot. I mean, you're a real fucking moron. I'm sorry. I mean, why would you even put yourself in that position? So that's kind of where things stand with the situation. It doesn't look like anything's going to change. My biggest fear is this, because Beck already turned down WWE's invite, which is good. I have no interest in seeing Glenn Beck on television. I mean, I guess there's the car crash mentality of it. It could have been mildly entertaining to see what happened if he actually did show up. I have no interest in seeing Glenn Beck on Raw. I have no interest in seeing Glenn Beck at all on television, let alone on my wrestling show. The guy wants publicity, believe me, every bit as much as WWE does. I'd rather both of them not get what they want in this case. But he already said no. And the thing about this whole situation that worries me is I wonder if we're in for a repeat of the Stan Kroenke episode on Raw this week. For those of you who don't know what I'm talking about, back in 2009, WWE was booked for Raw at the Pepsi Arena. I think it was the Pepsi Arena in Denver. And at the last minute, the ownership of the arena, and Kroenke is the owner, basically bumped them out of the building. There was some sort of conflict with the NBA team, the Denver Nuggets. I guess they made the playoffs or something when they weren't supposed to, and they, you know, the NBA game got preference over wrestling, even though that date had been booked for literally like 6 months or more for WWE. I think the previous summer they had booked that arena date. So Vince McMahon pitched a fit. Oh, it's so unfair. Which I always laugh when Vince McMahon complains about something being so unfair when you think back to his business practices and the way he put people out of business in the 80s. You know, I just think it's funny. Not that I'm faulting him for it. He put people out of business to make his business stronger. I guess there's nothing wrong with that, but I just find it, I find it hard to get sympathetic for Vince McMahon when he complains, woe is me, this is so unfair. But anyway, Vince, I think, invited Kroenke to come on Raw, just like they invited Glenn Beck. Kroenke said no. And so, basically, to vent his frustrations, instead of going to a therapist and sparing us, we had to sit through a segment on Raw with Vince McMahon basically making fun of Stan Kroenke by way of a Stan Kroenke impersonator. And Stan Kroenke's actual name, it's E. Stan Kroenke. That's his first initial. And so Vince McMahon couldn't help himself. He decided to mention this fact. He said, I've done some research and I found out what the E in E. Stan Kroenke stands for, and it stands for Enos. And so he made some jokes about how, his first name sounds like penis, only it's Enos, because, that's funny to Vince McMahon. And this, it was just a very, very bizarre, pathetic, sad display. One of the worst Raws of all time because of that one segment. And I fear that we may be in for a Glenn Beck impersonator on Raw this Monday. So I don't know what to expect. I'm almost afraid to tune in. But I guess we'll see. So it certainly made for an interesting couple of days there with all of this controversy. Swagger is still facing potential jail time. I think he's got a court date March 12th, sometime second week of March. I think he has to go back there for a court date, and he faces up to, I think, 2 days in prison or in jail, or something like that. I say good, send him. You do the crime, you do the time. Again, this DUI shit, I have no sympathy for people who get busted for DUI, who are, in fact, under the influence of something at the time, just because, you want to put yourself in that position, be my guest, but don't put other people in that position. What if it's your friend or family member on the road? You see it with drunk drivers all the time, and how many times have you heard stories about drunk drivers who ram other people on the road, those people die, the victim dies, and the driver walks away without a scratch? And those stories just piss me off so much. So I have no sympathy for people like this. Like I said, Swagger, I'd fire him. I wouldn't want to, but I would do it. Anyway, that's the Jack Swagger situation. So let's move on here. Raw this past Monday night emanated from Lafayette, Louisiana. This is how we do it. I got about 5 more of those in my back pocket. That's how many times we were subjected to that damn Jackson Hewitt commercial during the show. 6 times during the show we had to listen to that frickin' commercial. And we've got almost 2 more months of that stuff, by the way, before tax day in April. So it's not going to go away anytime soon. I used to like that song, too, and now they're just killing it for me. Story of the show was how it built up, really, next week's show, that being this Monday, as a pretty big deal. In fact, the opening segment on this week's Raw, this past week, was to set up the main event for the following week's show. John Cena was confronted by CM Punk, and he agreed to put his WrestleMania title shot on the line next week in a match against Punk, the same shot he earned by winning the Royal Rumble. I've never liked the winner of the Rumble putting up their title shot before WrestleMania. To me, it just cheapens the Rumble. The winner of the Royal Rumble guarantees themselves a title shot at WrestleMania. It doesn't give them the right to then prostitute that shot and put it on the line so somebody else can win it. What's the point of having the Royal Rumble then? The first time they ever did that was back in 96. Shawn Michaels had a match at the In Your House pay-per-view. Before WrestleMania 12, he put his shot up on the line in a match against Owen Hart. So they've done this for a long time now. It's not like a recent phenomenon or anything. It's just dumb to me. Why would anybody, babyface or heel, willingly put their shot on the line? You could say John Cena's a babyface. He wants to show that, he can overcome adversity and accept any challenge. And I don't buy that. That's not a valid excuse. Why not say, CM Punk, I earned my shot in the main event of WrestleMania, okay? I outlasted 29 other guys to get there. If you can beat me next week, then you deserve a shot too. Triple threat at WrestleMania. Even that would make more sense. You can fit Punk in there, but Cena's not going to willingly put his title shot on the line. Why would he do that? Given the Undertaker's return last night, I have to believe that he'll be making an appearance on Raw tomorrow night to kick off his program with CM Punk. I don't know if he'll cost Punk the match, or more likely we hear the gong at the end of the show after he loses to John Cena. I just don't see what the logic would be if he were to cost Punk the actual match. I mean, they could do it. They could do some sort of kind of false finish where the lights go out at some point, and either you think it's the Shield or it is the Shield. But, you know, John Cena kicks out of a near fall. Lights go out again. Only this time when they come back, it's The Undertaker. I mean, they could do something like that, but why? Why would Undertaker just out of nowhere interfere in CM Punk's match? I guess I'll leave that up to them to figure out. That's why I think, if anything, it'll be afterwards. We're also getting a fight this Monday between Paul Heyman and Vince McMahon, the same Vince McMahon who just had hip surgery 3 weeks ago. In fact, in storyline, it was a hip replacement, not just a hip surgery. So, 67-year-old men aren't moving around very well after a hip replacement, let alone fighting somebody. But logic be damned. By the way, Vince must have hurt himself again after that WrestleMania press conference on Monday, because he certainly didn't have those crutches with him that he had on Raw. He was walking around on stage pretty well in New Orleans at that WrestleMania 30 press conference. The other big news, and you know it's a busy news week when the spinner belt is retired, and it takes me, let's see, 31 minutes to make the first mention of it. The Rock unveiled a new WWE Championship belt on Monday night. Yes, our long national nightmare is finally over. 8 years in the making. The spinner belt is dead. Actually, it hasn't spun in years, but they put the spinning mechanism back in the belt on Monday just so Rock could make it spin for dramatic effect. The new title is the same one we saw the prototype images of months ago that were floating around that got leaked on the internet. Only this one is adorned with lots of diamonds, and it has Brahma Bull logo plates on each side. So it's not the Brahma Bull belt that I talked about once on the Sound Off. Somebody asked me in the mailbag, and I told the story about how there actually was a Brahma Bull belt made, kind of like Steve Austin had a smoking skull belt. The belt just never made TV. WWE claims it was lost in the mail or something, which I think is complete bullshit. I'm sure they have it in their warehouse somewhere. So this belt has Brahma Bull logo plates on the sides. They're interchangeable, so when Rock loses it, you know, they can just take them off. No nameplate on the new belt, which I'm fine with. I never liked nameplates on the title. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I just never did. The Winged Eagle belt never had a nameplate. The Big Eagle belt from the Attitude Era never had a nameplate. I think this nameplate shit started with the Undisputed title. It's not necessary. I know who the fucking champion is. I don't need a nameplate to identify him. And believe me, the champion knows his name too. If he doesn't, then he's been hanging out with Jack Swagger too much. But as far as the new belt goes, I like it. You know, I like the new belt. I think it's something that'll grow on me even more as time goes on. It's funny to me. You know, wrestling fans are a rare breed. You know, for years now, they have bitched and they have moaned about the spinner belt and how gaudy it looks and how it looks like crap and it looks like a toy. I mean, not everybody. I know there were a lot of people out there who actually did like the belt. But I think it's safe to say the majority of fans seem to hate it, at least the majority of fans online. And yet, here we are with a new title, finally, after all these years. And the reaction I've seen online seems to be mostly negative. I won't say universally negative, but it seems to be mostly negative. People saying it sucks, go back to the spinner. I just find it hilarious. You know, the belt is fine. It is a vast improvement over the spinner version. It just leaps and bounds better. You know, would I have preferred a more traditional look? Yes. You know, a globe, for example, somewhere on that belt would have been nice. But it's not a big deal. You know, the biggest reason of all, I'll give you the biggest reason right now, why this belt is so much better than the spinner. The title now says WWE Champion. It doesn't say champ. Yes, champ. Apparently, this was the championship of lazy spellers for 8 years. At least now it has the whole word actually spelled out. That alone makes it better. The one thing I can't believe is that they couldn't wait 2 more months to unveil the new title. I thought for sure they were going to hold off until April. And celebrate the 50th anniversary of the championship by debuting the new look. Yeah, you waited this long. What's another 2 months? But I guess they wanted Rock to have it, so there you go. Alberto Del Rio beat Dolph Ziggler with the armbar on Raw. This could have been your world title program for WrestleMania, but instead Dolph just loses on the show. And after the match, Big E Langston laid out Del Rio. And they did this awesome tease where Ziggler contemplated cashing in his briefcase. He's sitting there. He's looking at Del Rio laying on the mat. He looks back at the briefcase, and he's just back and forth, back and forth. And he makes the call. He's going to cash in. And as he goes to hand the briefcase to the referee, Ricardo Rodriguez hijacks the briefcase, and he hightails it to the back. And Big E chased after Ricardo. And holy shit, is this guy fast. You would think he was a Kenyan marathon runner. They win all the marathons, you know, those Kenyan runners. It's actually very unfair. Either that or this dude has to be at the NFL Combine or something. He is lightning quick. And you wouldn't expect a guy that big and bulky to be that quick, but he is. So there was no cash in, but I thought the actual tease was actually very effective. The Miz beat Antonio Cesaro with the figure four leg lock on the show, and I nearly had a heart attack before I realized this match was non-title. And someone tell Jerry Lawler that I didn't mean that literally, because I know sometimes he has trouble with the definition of that word. Zeb Coulter and Jack Swagger, they gave their State of the Union address on the show. This was before Swagger done gone and got himself arrested. Zeb talked about all of the illegal immigrants in this country. I mentioned on Twitter during the show, I do some live tweeting at Solid Monster during Raw every Monday night, because sometimes when you're watching a three-hour television show, you just have to pass the time by entertaining yourself. And I mentioned that I love the irony of the Zeb Coulter character ragging on foreigners when the man portraying the character actually lived in and booked wrestling in Puerto Rico for years and years. And yes, I realize Puerto Rico is technically part of the U.S., but my point is, if you go back to that first Zeb Coulter promo, he talked about people that don't look like him, right? You have plenty of people who live in Puerto Rico who don't look like old Zeb. So I think, I don't know if that's, you know, done on purpose to be ironic or if that's just something I picked up on, but I thought it was ironic. Last thing I want to mention about Raw here is how The Shield continues to be booked strongly. They wrestled their very first match on Raw. It was another six-man tag, this time against Sheamus, Ryback, and Chris Jericho, who I thought for sure was going to do a turn on this show. He was the one who went to Vicky Guerrero and asked for this match. And again, there's been rumors of Ryback and Chris Jericho having a match at WrestleMania. It looked perhaps after the Elimination Chamber like maybe Ryback was going heel, the way he kind of, you know, he took the losing fall at the pay-per-view, and then he kind of walked out on John Cena. He walked out in a huff. But the rumor has been that Jericho is going to go heel and face Ryback, a match that I would rather not see. Obviously, they're not doing Ziggler and Jericho for the championship. I still would love to see a Chris Jericho-Dolph Ziggler match with Ziggler going over. Jericho, I thought, put CM Punk over big time last year at WrestleMania, and he could do the same for Dolph, I think, on this year's show. But no hints of any turn from anybody in this match, just a straight six-man tag, and The Shield wins another one. The match was real good, and another group of main event guys that The Shield gets a legitimate win over. I mean, you can't really ask for anything more than that. By the way, I saw Rock's new movie, Snitch, last night. Really enjoyed it. Rock was very good in his role. I thought it was a bit distracting at times, because The Rock in this movie basically plays an average guy. The movie is not based on true events, it's inspired by true events. See, whenever you hear about a movie that's based on true events, I mean, every movie takes creative license, obviously, because it's a movie. You got to make it exciting. But when they say based on a true story, usually the movie is, in fact, based around something that actually happened, actual events that perhaps are embellished a bit. And then you have movies that say inspired by true events. And you gotta note the language there. Words matter. I've said that numerous times before. When something is inspired by actual events, I think more often than not, they're taking a lot of liberties in how they present the story. But the basic premise is that The Rock plays this father, runs his own business, divorced from his first wife, has a new wife and a new child. And his son from his first wife gets in a bit of trouble. His friend has a package of illegal drugs shipped to his house, which the son never actually told his friend he was cool with it, but the friend said, listen, I'm going to send it anyway. Just, you know, hold on to it for a day. You can even use some if you want to. Just hold on to it. And anyway, Rock's son gets busted by the DEA, and he's facing a mandatory prison sentence of 10 years, unless he snitches and rolls over on some other friends of his, which he refuses to do. And so The Rock decides to take matters into his own hands, wants to get his son's prison sentence reduced, and he goes to, I guess, the federal prosecutor and says, what do I have to do? What can I do? And the story just kind of goes from there, you know, and Rock is in all these dangerous situations where drug deals are being made, and he's trying to, you know, basically get these guys caught, because if the government can pick up some real big-time drug dealers, they have agreed to, again, let his son go, or, you know, reduce his sentence or what have you. So that's the basic premise of the movie without giving anything major away. Again, I thought it was a very kind of at-moments, edge-of-your-seat type of movie, I thought Rock was very good, but I found it distracting because he plays the everyman in this movie. I don't look at The Rock and think of The Rock as being your average-looking guy. I don't know too many people who look like The Rock. So him playing an everyman in this movie instead of an ass-kicker, and even getting his ass kicked in some scenes and like not fighting back, it just seemed very un-Rock-like to me. It's almost like, as good as Rock was in the role, I thought he was fine, they could have picked anybody in that role. They could have put Paul Giamatti. Could have put me in that role. Well, that might be a little bit of a stretch, but you could have put anybody in that role, so I'm not quite sure why or how Rock got the part. But that would be the biggest criticism I would have. John Bernthal is in the movie. Those of you who are Walking Dead fans of the TV show remember him. He was Shane from The Walking Dead. He was actually very good in the film and very much reminded me of the Shane character that he played actually on The Walking Dead, so it felt like I was watching Shane from The Walking Dead here in this movie with The Rock, which was kind of weird. But, you know, those of you that were on the fence about seeing the movie, some of you have asked me, you know, what did I think? You thinking about going to see it? I think it's worth it. You know, I don't feel ripped off or anything like that. I think it was just a fun way to spend, you know, 90 minutes or 100 minutes, whatever the movie was. I thought it was very good. There were tons of movie posters throughout the theater that I went to that were touting all these other Rock films that are coming out. You know, he's got G.I. Joe Retaliation next month, Pain and Gain in April, and Fast and Furious 6, which they showed a trailer for before the movie. I don't know how the guy finds the time, to be perfectly honest with you. He's off in Panama this week filming his reality show, The Hero. He's back on Raw, I believe, next week, but then, according to the schedule I saw, you know, he's on the March 4th Raw, and he doesn't appear on Raw again until March 25th. So he'll have a nice chunk there in March that he's going to miss as things stand. Then after WrestleMania, he's filming Hercules, which is why he's so ginormous these days. You know, you got to look the part. And now there are reports that I saw floating around this week that Rock is being listed as appearing at the Scott Trade Center in St. Louis for the Extreme Rules pay-per-view in May. So I have not verified that to be true. But if that's the case, we may be getting more of Rock in the ring this year than we all thought. Quick Hall of Fame update here. This is according to the latest Wrestling Observer newsletter. Donald Trump was scheduled to be announced for the Hall of Fame on Raw this past week. Obviously, that did not happen, so perhaps it'll come on the show this week. Cyndi Lauper's name has also been mentioned for the celebrity wing, but I don't think they would do two celebrity inductions in the same year. That would be overkill. So she's probably on standby if the Trump thing falls through. You know, as far as this whole celebrity wing stuff is concerned, Donald Trump, I don't think very highly of the guy. I think he's a crank, a quack, whatever other word you want to come up with for it. He's really embarrassed himself quite a bit lately, some of the shit that he's been tweeting. He's like a wrestler in that you got to sometimes take his Twitter away, you know, or tell him not to tweet after midnight or something. Actually, it's funny I mentioned Twitter because Trump actually tweeted the lyrics to a Lil Wayne song last night. He sent a tweet out that said, "These hoes think they classy. Well, that's the class I'm skipping." And he then quickly deleted the tweet and claimed that his account was hacked. I'm sure it was. Talk to Kurt Angle. He'll help you out. He's had his share of experiences being hacked before. I'm sure he can give you some advice. Anyway, as far as Trump in the Hall of Fame is concerned, you know, he's deserving, I suppose. You know, Trump hosted two WrestleManias back-to-back in 88 and 89. He's made numerous appearances at other WrestleManias, WrestleMania 7, and obviously a big part of WrestleMania 23, which I guess up until Rock and Cena, the Battle of the Billionaires was the biggest grossing match in WrestleMania history. I'm pretty sure Rock and Cena has officially surpassed that match. But that was a very big deal. Vince McMahon, poor Vince, lost his hair in that feud. His classic pompadour. His hair has never been the same since. Trump, for a cup of coffee, was actually the owner of Raw before he sold it back to Vince McMahon in one of the dumber angles I've ever seen them do. They could have gone a lot of different ways with that storyline a couple of years ago, but God, that was dumb. So anyway, I think he's a deserving induction, given his involvement with the company over the years. And Cyndi Lauper, without a doubt, is a deserving induction. She should have already been in. If they're going to have a celebrity wing, she should have been one of the first people in, her and Mr. T, because they played such an instrumental role in the success of the first WrestleMania, that whole rock and wrestling connection in the mid-'80s. Cyndi Lauper used to be a really big deal. To some people today, she still kind of is, but without her involvement and Mr. T's involvement, who knows how that first WrestleMania, that whole period, would have turned out for Vince and for WWF at the time. So, you know, I have no problem with either one of those names. Also, Scott Hall arrived in Atlanta this past Monday, right on schedule. He is now in the accountability crib with Jake the Snake Roberts and Diamond Dallas Page. There was a video that went up yesterday, which you might want to check out. I posted it on my Twitter, at Solomonster. It's about a 9-minute video of all things Jake the Snake and Scott Hall just sitting on a couch in Scott's house. So this must have been recorded at Hall's home before he went to Atlanta. This was right after Hall had gotten out of the hospital. I'm not sure if it was after he got out of the hospital for detoxing, which he did, he had to do before he went to the accountability crib, or if he was in the hospital for something else. But the video starts, you know, Hall opens his front door, Jake walks in with a cameraman, which is just bizarre. Jake looking a lot like Gallagher these days, the guy that smashes watermelons. He's got the hat, he's got the stringy hair, just, I don't know, just bears a resemblance to Gallagher for me for some reason. And the rest of the video is just the two of them sitting on Hall's couch just talking about life and talking about their trials and tribulations and what they've been through. And it's a rather inspiring video, and the progress that Jake the Snake has made has just been great to watch. I'm still very skeptical of Scott Hall. We've been down this road with him before. Jake, when you listen to Jake speak, he cries. You know, he talks about how he wants a purpose in life. In the video, he says the same thing. He wants his life to have a purpose, and he gets all teary-eyed. He clearly just wants his life to have some sort of meaning. And he feels like, I think, he's found that meaning now. He's doing good things, and he's telling Scott Hall, listen, Scott, it's all about positive vibes. This is what's been working for me. It's not just the yoga. It's everything else that goes into it. And Scott Hall says all the right things in the video. Scott Hall also looks better, and he sounds totally sober in the video. So this is very different than that phone call that DDP posted on YouTube about a week ago when he called Scott, and Scott was in a bad way drinking vodka for breakfast. He sounds much, much better in this video. But I don't know if Scott Hall feels the same way. There was a telling comment in the video, if you watch it, when Jake says, look, you know, I've got a purpose in life now and this and that, and Scott kind of reacts and he agrees and he says, yeah, man, he goes, that's what I'm looking for, that's what I need. And he says, what do you do when they stop chanting your name? And I thought that was a very telling comment, because he is the classic case of a wrestler, of a performer, who is probably used to the rush of the live crowd, people chanting Razor, people chanting Hall. And now that he's out of the spotlight, he's older, he's not on television, he's not, you know, in WWE or anything like that, he doesn't know what to do with himself. It's almost like maybe he's feeling sorry for himself, you know, without the fans chanting his name, without all the fame and everything that goes along with it, he feels like he's just on a path to nowhere in life, and so he does all this other stuff, and he relies on booze to get through the day. I just thought that was a very telling comment, and I don't know how you change someone's attitude, you know, if that's how they really feel. I mean, he's been in counseling and therapy for years. Obviously, it hasn't really worked out too well for him, so I wish him the best. I'm following this with great interest, so I'll have periodic updates on the Sound Off as new photos and new videos go up. I anxiously await the day, whether it takes a month, 2 months, 3 months, where they can post a before and after photo of Hall the way they did with Jake. You look at the before photo of Jake was like 330 pounds at one point. and now he's down to like 240, which is, he says, the lowest weight he's been at since 1989. He feels better. He looks better. I want to see a similar photo for Scott Hall after he starts doing the yoga and doing and eating right and doing all that stuff. So I'll have updates as things develop here on the Sound Off, just because I think it's a great story, and I hope it has a happy ending. TNA Impact Wrestling from this past Thursday night, the final show from London, England. They will be back here stateside this week, so this is the last of the UK shows. Hulk Hogan announced Bully Ray as the number one contender to Jeff Hardy's world title at Lockdown, even though he was hurt last week and didn't wrestle a match. Boy, I'll tell you what, if I'm Magnus or James Storm, I'd be real pissed off right now. I mean, what was the point of even having those four matches last week to determine the number one contender for the championship? You know, Magnus had a match with Daniels, he won. Storm had a match, he won. There were two other matches. You know, Rude and Aries had a match, they both got counted. I forgot what the other match was. But why wouldn't they be upset? You know, they had a match, they won. Why is Bully Ray just given a title shot? Because he's Hulk's son-in-law? This really is WWE. Bully suggested they do a six-man tag on the show with torn quad and all, by the way. He, Sting, and Hulk Hogan himself against the Aces and Eights, and Hogan accepted. Now, mind you, he has not wrestled since Bound for Glory 2011, as Mike Tenay pointed out on commentary, but we were supposed to actually believe that Hulk Hogan would be wrestling unannounced on this taped television show. So I think we could see what was coming from a mile away. We had a real fun eight-man tag on this show with Bobby Roode, Austin Aries, Chris Daniels, and Frankie Kazarian against Chavo Guerrero, Hernandez, James Storm, and Joseph Park. And they even let Joe Park take the fall in this match. He got the pin with a splash off the second rope on Kazarian. So, of course, Kazarian would take the losing fall. He always takes the losing fall. I pointed this out before. I don't know why, but he does. The best part about all of this, though, it looks like we're heading for a tag team title feud with Bobby Roode and Austin Aries against Bad Influence, which I cannot wait to see. They are the two best teams in TNA, the two best teams in wrestling right now. I can't think of two better, more entertaining tag teams. You look at the WWE tag team scene, and it's funny, you know, 2-3 months ago, it looked like there was some real potential in the tag division in WWE. Things were on an upswing. You had a bunch of different teams. You had that team, the Ascension, down in NXT that was probably going to be called up any day. And then one of the people from the Ascension fucked up. I think, wasn't he busted for DUI or something? And he got released. So the Ascension is no more. The primetime players are no more, at least for now, because Darren Young is out for 6 months with a knee injury. So Titus O'Neil is a singles wrestler now. Obviously, Justin Gabriel, Tyson Kidd is no more because Tyson Kidd's out for the rest of the year with an injury. So what are you really left with in WWE? You got Hell No, which I think has run its course. It was very entertaining at one point. Now it's just kind of there. You've got the Usos, who they really are severely underrated. They don't do enough with those guys. You've got the Road Scholars, who are only temporarily back together. Apparently they're on a reunion tour, whatever the hell that means. What other teams do you really have in WWE right now? Even Santino and Zack Ryder, they were Cobro. They're not even a team anymore because Santino's out with a neck injury. So by default, these are the two best teams in wrestling right now as far as I'm concerned. There's so much potential here in so many different ways. I mean, the comedic potential, the potential to have some real kick-ass wrestling matches. I am very much looking forward to this. Even though it's two heel tag teams, I'll excuse that because I think it'll be very entertaining. Rockstar Spud beat Robbie E. They did the breakup afterwards between Robbie E. and Robbie T., which makes me kind of sad because they actually played very well off one another. Robbie T. is also a walking billboard that just screams, "We don't drug test." Or if they do, they obviously don't punish anyone for failing a test. Velvet Sky won the Knockouts title in a four-way elimination match against Tara, Gail Kim, and Miss Tessmacher. Tara actually got pinned first, which guaranteed a new champion would be crowned. During the match, Taz predicted a Gail Kim victory, which just shows that even when making predictions, Aces and Eights just can't help but lose. Although their fortunes would change later on in the show, believe it or not. We may as well just skip to the main event because there really was nothing else of any substance on the show. If you're standing up, you may want to sit down for this one. Aces and Eights actually won a match. No joke. They really won. And they even pinned Sting to boot. Hulk Hogan, of course, never came out. So it was basically a handicap match with Bully Ray and Sting against D-Von, Doc, and Mr. Anderson. Late in the match, Sting was about to win with the Scorpion Deathlock. Aces and Eights came out with a helpless Brooke Hogan held captive. And Hulk Hogan, who had been beaten down in the back, Bully Ray went to save his wife. And poor Sting was left to the wolves, and he took the fall. He got beat up after the match. And Aces and Eights stood tall, which is a rare sight, one that we may never see again. So if you DVR'd the show, you may want to save it on your DVR forever, because you may never see this again. Actually, I would expect Aces and Eights to have a big night at Lockdown, at least in the main event, when they do the Bully Ray turn, and he wins the championship from Jeff Hardy. That's my prediction, anyway. As far as that lethal Lockdown match, I mean, I could see them losing, but I still predict a Bully Ray turn at the end of the night, and he wins the title and joins Aces and Eights. So if that happens, that will be a good night for Aces and Eights. So far, the matches on the Lockdown card for the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, March 10th, you got Jeff Hardy and Bully Ray for the TNA World Heavyweight title. You have Team Sting against the Aces and Eights in a lethal Lockdown match. And the only other match officially announced right now is Kurt Angle against Wes Briscoe. So I guess they'll spare us having to watch Garrett Bischoff wrestle. And he did wrestle on the show, by the way, against Samoa Joe. Didn't really do much. But I would imagine they'll probably add Aries and Rude against Bad Influence for the tag belts at Lockdown. I guess we'll find out, but that's the card as of right now. Let's move on to the mailbag. If you have questions or shout-outs, you can email them to me at thesolemonster@gmail.com. thesolemonster@gmail.com. And this first shout-out here looks kind of familiar. It actually came with a message. It says, press play. Wonder what this is. Let's find out.
Do you want to be rich?
Only because I am so important, not Noah the Mark. I, Brian Blade, am chiming in with my very own birthday shout-out, Saturday, February 23rd at approximately 2 a.m. Now, assuming the greatest podcaster of all time posts SoundUp 262 on his usual day of Sunday, my birthday will be history, but never fear, you may still wish me a happy belated birthday on Twitter, @SuperBlade, that's @SuperBlade. Adios.
So now I have Brian Blade trying to hijack my show. First ever audio shout-out sent in by somebody else. Normally when people write in, they request me to do the shout-out, but not Brian Blade. He's a special guy. And he did, in fact, celebrate a birthday this weekend, so happy belated birthday to him. J.R. Sanders from straight out of Compton, California writes, and I remember you saying on an episode of The Sound Off not too long ago that the reason Dolph Ziggler is jobbing so much is because he is going to win the World Heavyweight title very soon. With that being said, I don't understand WWE's logic here. If someone is going to be world champion, shouldn't they be booked to win matches a lot more? I mean, Dolph Ziggler is not being booked like a future champ. He just looks like an upper mid-card jobber. Is WWE convincing you that Dolph is going to be a great world champion one day with all of the jobbing they have him doing at the moment? No, not at all. I've never understood why they do that. Their logic is, hey, we can beat this guy as much as we want and give other people wins because he's going to get the title anyway, so it doesn't matter. And I think that's ridiculous. I mean, I'm not saying Ziggler has to go undefeated and never lose before he gets the belt, but I mean, my God, it'd be nice if our future champions could be positioned strongly before they actually win the big one, you know? Don't use the title to make the guy, use the guy to make the title. It's supposed to be this rich prize that only a select few can attain. I mean, what does it say when the guy who wins it has been on such an embarrassing losing streak? I mean, we all know what they think of the World Heavyweight title anyway. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe they just don't give a crap about the World Heavyweight title. Would they do this with somebody, you know, who's going to win the WWE Championship? Can you find any examples of something like this? I don't know off the top of my head. Michael from Romania writes in, I've been a listener of your great podcast since episode 130, and I think you're doing a fantastic job with it, and your columns on LayfieldReport.com. The question I have for you regards WrestleMania 29. I just read the article on SE Scoops that talked about John Cena saying he didn't know if he would be participating in this year's Mania. Yeah, I'm sorry to cut you off there, Michael, but did you hear about this shit? John Cena was doing media interviews, and I guess, you know, he told one reporter, you know, had you asked me 3 months ago if I would even be part of WrestleMania, the answer probably would have been no. I mean, as if. Hulk Hogan would be proud. The force is strong with this one. That's what Hulk Hogan would say. Anyway, back to Michael's question. In case this actually happened and John Cena was not on the card, what would you think of a Rock vs. Punk 3 match at WrestleMania where Punk can finally be in the main event like he always wanted and regain the WWE Championship? Also, if Undertaker decided to wrestle, where would that leave him? What opponent could he have if not Punk? I do not want to see Rock vs. Punk 3 at WrestleMania as the main event for two reasons. Number one, I do not believe that your WrestleMania main event should be a rematch of a rematch. You know, we've now seen this match 2 months in a row on pay-per-view. And number two, you know, Rock has now beaten CM Punk twice. What is the purpose of a third meeting? I mean, I know why, you know, they did the things they did in the rematch where Punk had Rock beat, but the referee wasn't there. They wanted to make Punk look strong and maybe leave themselves an opening to put Punk in the match if Undertaker couldn't come back. But still, Rock has pinned Punk twice, once with the People's Elbow and once with the Rock Bottom. I mean, why does there have to be a third match at WrestleMania, no less, in the main event? As far as Undertaker is concerned, I mean, if he was ready to wrestle and Punk was unavailable for some reason, the only other opponents that make sense for The Undertaker in singles matches are John Cena and Brock Lesnar. And I'm not sure Undertaker could handle a match with Brock Lesnar at this point because Brock Lesnar's a big, strong guy who throws people around. I don't want to see Brock Lesnar in a match where he has to treat the other guy with kid gloves because that's not Brock Lesnar. That's not the Brock Lesnar I want to see. When Brock comes out, I want to be able to look at him and go, Brock smash, and see Brock Lesnar beat the crap out of people like The Miz and whoever else they want him to destroy. That's just his style. It's this rough-looking, not that he goes in there and he actually, you know, shoots on people or anything like that, but I don't know if Undertaker can hold up to that or not. If he can, great. Let's make the match happen. But to me, Lesnar and Cena are the only opponents that make sense. And I could see Undertaker versus Cena next year, potentially being Undertaker's final WrestleMania match. Doing it this year, obviously, is not going to happen. This comes from Jason, who wanted me to read this. It's not a question, really. It's a statement. He says, why the hell do some fans obsess with bringing back the Attitude Era? What good is it having blood naked women in hardcore matches if the storylines are going to suck and the poor booking is going to continue? A lot of fans seem to be so damn confused on this subject that sometimes it gets very annoying. Can't they understand that bringing back the Attitude Era would not work these days because TV and society have changed so much and WWE is not going to change their product only to please a small minority who stream all of their pay-per-views and don't even bother to buy their merchandise? Also, the last time I checked, we had characters like CM Punk and The Shield on top, and I don't think they represent PG-13, do they? That comes from Jason. People need to quit obsessing over the little black box in the corner of the screen. If you flip the switch and you change it overnight to TV-14, the product is still going to be the exact same thing you see every week. It's not going to change anything. James from Dayton, Ohio. I've only been a listener to your podcast since episode 228 when you ranked the top 30 moments in Raw history, and I have been hooked ever since. The sound off is now easily the best part of my Sundays. I have read before from your mailbag that Jeff Hardy was scheduled to win the Money in the Bank ladder match at WrestleMania 24 and was wondering, had Hardy not gotten suspended before WrestleMania, what would have happened to CM Punk, who ended up winning the match instead? Would Punk be where he is today? Would Jeff Hardy still be in the WWE? And would he be the number two babyface in the company right now? Punk obviously would not have won the world title in 2008. I think it's safe to say if he doesn't win that Money in the Bank match, he doesn't win the championship. But I still think he would have turned out just fine. You know, he'd be exactly where he is now. You can't hold talent like that down for very long. And as far as Hardy is concerned, I think he would have ended up in TNA no matter what. You know, remember, that suspension came in 08. He was still in WWE in 09. And then he left because he got burned out and his contract was expiring. And then came the drug raid at his home and WWE had CM Punk go on TV and mock him, which pissed him off. And so Jeff went and signed with TNA. So I don't think anything would have changed. This comes from Michael Dweck. Congratulations on all your recent success with the Layfield Report. I have a question for you regarding a Twitter response you gave this week. Someone asked if The Rock would be subject to WWE's wellness policy. I've always been curious about this topic, Now, I don't want to assume anything about what The Rock may or may not be doing or taking, but come on, you can't help but look at him and assume things. How can a man who is currently WWE champion be walking around and not held to the same standard as other wrestlers? I understand that he is an exception to the rule in many instances, but should he really be the exception here as well? No, I don't think he should be. I'm with you. You know, Rock should be subject to the same wellness test everyone else is, if he's under contract, which he is. And maybe he is. Maybe he is wellness tested. You know? I don't believe that to be the case, personally, but I have no inside knowledge. You know, maybe Rock just hits the weights real hard and drinks his protein shakes, just like Scott Steiner. But, you know, The Rock is still a 40-year-old man. He's going to be 41 in May. You go back and look at The Rock 10 years ago, you are not supposed to get bigger like that as you get older. I mean, you may get bigger in terms of getting more round. People tend to get fatter. Their faces tend to fatten up a bit. But you don't get big as you get older the way that Rock has. That's just not how nature works. And, you know, he's got a bunch of movies he's filming after WrestleMania. I mentioned Hercules earlier on. He has to look big and jacked. How he gets that way, I'll leave that to your imagination. But I agree, he should absolutely be held to the same standard. Speaking of The Rock, Adrian from Australia writes in, The Rock was very successful during his first WWE run, made the company millions of dollars, and was very believable as a tough guy champion. After being absent for several years, The Rock comes back and is still a big money draw and a believable tough guy champion. When Hulk Hogan came back to WWE in 2002, even though he did big business, well, I don't know if he did big business or not, but anyway, did you think he was the toughest guy in the company? When Shawn Michaels came back, did he draw as much money as The Rock? I don't think so. My question is, with all of Rock's attributes and star power, do you consider him to be the greatest wrestler of all time? He may be, I mean, the greatest performer, perhaps. You know, when all is said and done, he may end up going down as the greatest of all time, just in terms of business, like purely business. You know, Rock has something that none of those other guys have. You know, Hogan, Austin, Michaels, Brett. You know, Rock has true mainstream global appeal. And, you know, Hulk Hogan, sure, he's known all over the world. He's got the name recognition. Pretty much everybody, I would think, knows who Hulk Hogan is or has heard the name before. But, you know, you look at many of his non-wrestling ventures and they've been failures. You know, and as this new Hogan Beach Shop down in Florida probably will be, if history is any indication. I mean, Pasta Mania, anybody? Remember Pasta Mania? He was a failure as a movie star. Even though I like No Holds Barred and Suburban Commando, but I am in the minority on that. He was never a box office draw. Hulk Hogan badly wanted to be a box office draw. He's been in a bunch of movies, some starring in a leading role, some as a cameo. He's never had a hit movie. He likely never will. The Rock is box office. You know, the dude has grossed over $1 billion worldwide. He comes back to WWE, and they end up doing the biggest WrestleMania main event of all time. They may even do bigger business this year in New York. Although, that's a little unfair. I mean, they have Brock Lesnar on the same show this year, which they didn't last year. So if they do better this year, it may be an unfair comparison to just give Rock all the credit for that, but you know, if we're talking dollars and cents, you're right. Rock could go down as the best. Time will tell. Alvin writes in, I've been trying to figure out a way to ask this without sounding racist. Uh-oh. Have you ever seen anyone without an African-American background who used a scissor kick? No, off the top of my head. I don't believe I have. At least not in WWE. You know, Booker T used the axe kick or scissors kick. See, I don't know if you're referring to an axe kick. I think it's the same thing. Booker T, R-Truth, Alicia Fox come to mind. All of them are, in fact, African-American. And for the record, I don't think that's a racist question at all. I mean, what's so racist about it? Are you offending the very sensitive population of African-American scissors kickers out there? I don't quite get why that would be such a racist question. I think the PC police need to move on to the next fake controversy here. Jason from Mercer, Pennsylvania writes in, I have been a faithful listener since discovering your podcast in November of 2011. You've helped me through many a morning as I work 90 feet underground in a facility analyzing material via computer, and I'm thankful for your show. You have tremendous insight and a great sense of humor when it comes to professional wrestling, and you're a pleasure to listen to. Well, thank you, Jason. I would be most grateful if you would give me a shout-out as my birthday is on February 27th, and I am turning 38. So happy birthday, Jason. Just reading your letter here, you do not sound a day over 36, if that makes you feel good. He says, I do have a question. I've gathered from previous podcasts that you played video games in the past. Do you have any favorite wrestling games? I used to love playing WrestleFest in the arcades in the early 90s and also played a lot of WrestleMania 2000 on the Nintendo 64 and even played WWE 13 now with my son. Do you know if the remake of WrestleFest is worth playing? Well, to answer your second question first, I don't think it is. I played the free version on the iPhone. See, the thing that made the first WrestleFest so good, like, it was just, you look at the first WrestleFest that came out in the arcade like 25 years ago, and you look at the new version of it, and the graphics just, I don't know. I mean, the graphics are totally different. It doesn't really remind me of the original WrestleFest game at all. I was actually very disappointed, quite frankly, when I first played it. But as far as back in the day, I used to play games like everybody else. You know, the WrestleFest arcade game was a favorite of mine back then. You know, with those arcade games back then, I don't know how it is now, but people would just crowd around them and watch these 8-man tags that you could do in the game or like Royal Rumbles. And everybody would just be, like, crowding around. There'd be, like, 3 or 4 people at the controls. It was really a lot of fun. I'm trying to think of other games here. They had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which used to be big. I guess they're doing another movie next year. Apparently, Megan Fox has been cast. Michael Bay's involved, which just, yeah, boy, not going to get into that. But Ninja Turtles were really popular back in the day. There was a game called Turtles in Time that I remember being a lot of fun. Mortal Kombat was the other arcade game that was very popular and attracted the biggest crowds, at least when I played them. These days, why even bother with arcades? Everyone already has their own arcade at home on their PS3 or their Xbox. I mean, why feed quarters into some arcade game and probably pick up an STD just by touching the controls? As far as other wrestling games I enjoyed, WrestleMania, the arcade game, stands out. You know, you have Doink the Clown throwing flowers at his opponent. Undertaker would throw souls at his opponent. Just completely ridiculous, but I enjoyed it. The WWF Warzone and WWF Attitude games, those were really the first games, I think, to kick off the modern era of WWE games. They were the first games that really went for that more realistic look to the characters. Those were fun. Look, I'm sure if I actually had time to play WWE 13 and some of the newer games they have, I'd probably be blown away by the realism. But I just don't have the time these days just to sit around playing games, so I can't really comment on that much. Lastly, Moondog wants to know, if we follow you on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and YouTube, that makes us members of the Fantastic Four. But now that you've added the Layfield Report to your repertoire, that's 5. What do we call ourselves now? What are we members of now? It's a very good question, Moondog, if that is your real name. I've given this some thought. You are hereby part of the Fabulous Five. How about that? If you follow me through all of those different means, you are part of the Fabulous Five. We have evolved over time. If you remember, we started, it was Double Trouble. That was Facebook and Twitter. We went to the Triple Threat, then the Fantastic Four, and now we have the Fabulous Five. So I hope I don't add any more jobs just because I have no clue what I would call it if we ever make it to 6. That's going to do it for the mailbag. You can email me your questions and shout-outs, thesolemonster@gmail.com. When emailing, please try to include how long you've been listening for. If you know the episode number, roughly, can include that as well. And please, please include your name, full name if possible. Even just your first name will do. Also, just so you know, I am a contributor to the Layfield Report, as I mentioned earlier. My latest column went up yesterday, which is usually the day of the week the wrestling ones go up for me. I'll have another Walking Dead episode recap later on tonight for episode number 3 of the second half of this season here. You can follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster is my handle. We are inching closer to 2,000 followers, so hopefully you guys can help get me there. Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. You can send me a friend request. Always fun stuff going on Facebook. We have a very lively Raw thread going on each and every Monday night, pay-per-views and all that jazz. So friend me on Facebook. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel, YouTube.com. My username on there is TheSolomonster, all one word. That's how you can find me and subscribe. I have been meaning to put up the next vintage Sound Off episode, episode number 7, which I don't know exactly which day it's going up, but I do plan on getting that up, and I may also get up the very first episode of SE Scoops Live. That was the very first live show that me and Noah Mark did back on St. Patrick's Day in 2008. So I may try getting that show up in the very near future on YouTube as well. So this is a good time to subscribe to me on there. And you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Type in Solomonster Sounds Off. You can subscribe, and every time a new episode goes up, it will be automatically downloaded for you. So when there is a rare bonus show like we had 261 this past Monday, for those of you maybe who don't frequent SE Scoops as much during the day, if you're working and then it gets pushed down, you don't see it, you can avoid all of that just by subscribing in iTunes if you want to. And you can leave a review for the show in there as well. I always appreciate that. So that's it for episode 262. I want to thank each and every one of you for your support, as always. And we will be back here next weekend, episode 263. More Sound Off on SEScoops.com. So until next time, be well, stay safe, and we will see you right back here, as always, next weekend. Take it easy, guys.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sounds Off on SEScoops.com.